The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. He's just gotten back from a few days' trip to London. Now, this is at least my first show of 2018. I guess we've had a few days of 2018. It's still close enough to the start of the year that it feels kind of weird to write the date. Now, we know the Bible calendar. The new year starts at quite a different time, but this man-made new year is still an occasion for a lot of looking back at the last year, a lot of looking forward, making predictions for the next year, especially in the news media. And I thought what I'd do for today's program is build this program around just one prediction, one set of predictions from one forecasting group. And we'll look at those predictions and we'll just see how dramatically closely they match to everything that we've been talking about here at the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, because they match closely with Bible prophecy. So this report, it's from the Eurasia Group. It's a consulting firm that does political risk environment. They're often interviewed on a lot of different TV channels, I think like CNBC, Bloomberg, this kind of thing. We will hear one of those news interviews in a little bit. And they released a report just a few days ago where they concluded that the world right now is at one of its most, at least in their history as a company, it is at the most dangerous point in their history. Here's their president, Ian Bremmer, introducing the report in a video they had for their website. This is clip one.
2018 is by far the most dangerous geopolitical risk environment that we have experienced since we started the company some 20 years ago. The markets don't recognize it. They're hitting records on a regular basis. The global economy feels pretty good.
But geopolitically, we are in the midst of a deep recession. And unlike
the last economic recession, the worst since the Great Depression, this time around, geopolitically, countries don't feel like they need to hurry to a fix. Certainly the United States,
the one country in the world that could be making a difference to pull us out of geopolitical recession,
doesn't feel like it's their problem. The Chinese are responding, but they're creating an alternative model to the extent they can, at least economically. The Europeans are nowhere to be seen. The Russians are only causing problems.
And rogue states and actors see all this as an opportunity, some space for them to operate.
That's a dangerous 2018. It's one you're going to particularly see when we get to risk number one. But first,
so a dangerous 2018, I'll just say, because our producer Sam Livingston is pulling faces at me as the audio goes there. They've kind of got this tour bus theme going with this video. They're giving a tour of what's to be expected in 2018. So that's why you hear the changes in audio quality there. They kind of switch the camera to make it look like, the voice is coming out of some audio guide on a tour bus. So there's nothing wrong with your speakers. There's nothing wrong with our sound system. And thankfully, they give up pretty quickly in the video on doing that particular gimmick. So that's what's going on with the audio. But it makes some great points. This is it's a full-time risk analysis firm. And they're saying this is the most dangerous period of time in our history. Ian Bremner afterwards, and he's a good analyst. I've been following him for quite a while now, but he then did the media rounds after the report came out, talking to a lot of different TV companies. And we'll just play a quick clip now of him talking to CNBC. This is about the same report. This is clip 0.5, I think I called it.
Thanks for joining us. I want to say Happy New Year.
Say Happy
but
Happy
this
New
report
Year.
Is not making me happy.
No.
This is tough. We have a lot of challenges ahead of us.
Look, the good news is the economy is doing well.
Okay.
The stock markets are great.
But that's not what I do. I focus on the geopolitics. And I got to tell you that in the 20 years since I started the firm, we've never had a geopolitical environment that has been this volatile, this uncertain, this dangerous. And you know, usually when you have an economic recession, then everyone says, oh, we need to get out of it. We need stimulus. We need infrastructure. You've got a geopolitical recession where the world is unwinding, fragmenting geopolitically. You don't have the United States saying, oh, we need to respond to this. In fact, you've got the Americans doubling down saying, not my problem.
Right.
Like, you guys all do it. Right. Well, I mean, that's a world that's going to have more conflict. I mean, I think everyone understands, right? When we read the headlines, we know that this is unsteady. Our spidey sense is tingling. We understand it's going to be bad. This report tries to contextualize it, tries to explain what those risks actually are, right, and where the places you really don't have to worry about.
Okay. So information is power. Let's dig into it.
You mentioned in something you just sort of...
So that's it. The world is becoming a more dangerous place. And so he's talking about being a geopolitical recession. It's not an economic crisis, but it's a political crisis, a time where you see increasing conflicts, as he talked about there. In their report, he writes, let's be honest, 2018 doesn't feel good. Yes, markets are soaring, the economy isn't bad, but citizens are divided, governments aren't doing much governing, and the global order is unraveling. The scale of the world's political challenges is daunting. Liberal democracies have less legitimacy than at any time since World War II, and most of their structural problems don't appear fixable. Today's strongest leaders show little interest in civil society or common values. In the 20 years since we started Eurasia Group, the global environment has had its ups and downs, but if we had to pick one year for a big, unexpected crisis, the geopolitical equivalent of the 2008 financial meltdown, it feels like 2018. Sorry. And yes, the sorry is in the quote. So it feels like we're heading for a geopolitical equivalent of 2008, a global meltdown when it comes to geopolitics, some kind of catastrophe. And we'll go through their top 10 list because so many of these points tie into exactly what the Trumpet has been forecasting. And because of that, it is a fascinating study. We've been talking about many of these risks for years, and now you have a top political risk management consultancy firm, media organization, drawing attention to so many of exactly the same points. And as I alluded to earlier, you know, we use Bible prophecy as the foundation of our forecasts. And I know that's not exactly fashionable, just to put it mildly, in today's world. I mean, there's so much prophecy it's in the Bible that if you were a Christian, you've pretty much got no choice if you say you believe the Bible to study into, to accept Bible prophecy. But so few do that. But in this program, you'll just see how so many of these things that we've been talking about for years because of Bible prophecy, they're exactly the same things now that people are pointing to and saying these are really big dangers. And as each year, as each month goes by, you're just seeing world events more and more match what the Bible says to expect. So let's throw out any prejudices or any ideas of what is intellectually fashionable and look at the evidence. So we'll start at we'll look at their top 10 list in their risk tour of 2018. And just like they do on the video, we'll start with risk number 10.
Our 10th risk is Africa's security. Large countries in Africa have recently shown quite robust investment climates and been relatively immune to the instability that surrounds them. That could well change this year.
You see that with terrorism, Al-Shabaab and ISIS only growing across sub-Saharan Africa. You see it with greater refugee flows that are going to be picking up over the course of 2018. And you see it with greater concerns downside for these economies. This is not the African dream that consulting firms have been talking about for over a decade now. It's actually a much more dangerous environment.
So their 10th risk, Africa destabilizing. In their report, they write, the threat lies in security risks, militancy, and terrorism. The dangers posed by Al-Shabaab in East Africa and Al-Qaeda in West Africa are not new, but they're set to intensify. Despite losing territory in 2017, Al-Shabaab is still carrying out successful one-off surprise attacks and will look to more international targets in 2018. The Islamic State is likely to increase activity in West Africa and expand into East Africa as it is pushed from traditional strongholds in the Middle East. So that's what they're writing right now. And here's a quote from our 2013 April print edition from Mr. Gerald Flurry in an article titled Watch Algeria. And he started that article by writing, North Africa is turning into a battleground with enormously important prophetic implications. He goes on to talk about some terrorist attacks that had just happened at that point, and goes on to talk about how Iran is behind a lot of those terrorists. And then he writes, but Iran isn't the only one interested in Africa. Germany is making strong inroads as well. Both of these powers are racing to get as much control of North Africa as they can. They will inevitably clash with each other. So Iran racing, radical Islam racing to get as much control of North Africa as it can. And we were writing that in 2013. Now, since then, you've had massive European military involvement in the Middle East. You've had around 1,000 German troops going into Mali, Germany taking control of the, or at least permission granted in the Bundestag for deployment for up to 1,000. I don't think it ever reached the ceiling. But anyway, at least hundreds of German troops going into Mali, running the training mission there for the Malian military, the Malian police. You've had French forces going into the Central African Republic. You're having Germany and France working together to create the G5 Sahel, this new regional force, but made up of nations in West Africa. But as they bring out in the Eurogroup report, this isn't enough right now to contain what radical Islam is doing and expanding into this area. And yeah, we've seen a lot of these attacks in 2017. For example, Kieran Underwood had an article on our website a few months ago called North Africa is Suffering Its Own 9/11s. And he writes in that article, in the northern parts of Africa, that inhabited continent most abandoned by our Western newsreels, there are horrific bombings, African 9/11, so to speak, occurring at a frequency that ought to stun. He said, take, for example, the latest bombing of Mogadishu, the capital city on the east coast of Somalia. Last Saturday, October 14th, a truck masquerading as a transporter of agricultural products drove into the city, stopped outside what used to be the Safari Hotel, and triggered the approximately 350 kilograms of explosives it was hiding. And that attack killed around 300 people. And as Kieran points out in that article, that it was, you know, Somalia has a population of 14 million. So 300 dying in a population of 14 million on a kind of per person basis, that's a bigger impact on that country than 9/11. I mean, he writes, not that that suffering of that type can be quantified, but merely in population terms, Somalia's attack was nearly twice as impactful as the 9/11 attack. So you're having all of these major attacks across Africa. And the Eurasia Group is saying, you know, we've had that in 2017, watch for that to get worse in 2018. Remember, 2013, Mr. Flurry was saying North Africa's turning into a battleground. That's what they're predicting now for 2018. They write, the Africa rising narrative remains appealing, but this year we'll face a new challenge. The continent's core countries, the Côte d'Ivoire, Nigeria, Kenya, and Ethiopia, among others, have recently demonstrated robust investment climates, but they've been generally sealed off from the troubles of the periphery, Mali, South Sudan, Somalia, etc. But in 2018, negative spillover from Africa's unstable periphery will increasingly spoil the continent's success story. So they're saying watch for the unrest in places like Somalia and Mali to spread, to impact places like Ethiopia. They write, the growing fragility of Africa's top performers has several implications. Nigeria, Kenya, Uganda, and Ethiopia face increased security costs at a time where their governments need to reduce spending. A spike in attacks would also undermine foreign investment perceptions already shaken by the election-related violence in Kenya. A growing social protest movement in Ethiopia and violent presidential succession uncertainties in Nigeria and Uganda. Foreign investors may see their assets directly targeted. Tourists and energy installations will be especially at risk. This will put downward pressure on foreign direct investment into the continent, leading development reliant on limited local capital. And the pressure of security-related refugee flows on the countries in the region and in Europe will not abate, creating a headache for policymakers on both sides of the Mediterranean. So this is going to keep getting worse. You're going to keep getting more and more refugees flowing into Europe with all of the big security problems that that brings. And Ethiopia is one of the countries that's going to be affected. Let's just go back quickly to Mr. Flurry's article on that Watch Algeria article. And he writes, the reason this is so significant is that these two powers, Europe and Iran, Iranian-backed radical Islam, are prophesied to clash in the end time. Daniel 11 and verse 40 speaks of a war between the king of the south, which we can prove to be Iran, and radical Islam, the king of the north, which we know to be Germany, the leading group of nations. And you can write for our free book or order online on the website our free book, The King of the South. Just click on the literature tab there at the top right-hand corner, and we'll be happy, more than happy, to send that to you wherever you are in the world for free. No cost, no obligation, no follow-up. So you can learn more about it there. But Mr. Flurry, going back to this quote, he writes, a great prophecy of your Bible is about to be fulfilled. You need to watch what is happening in the Middle East and Africa. And so there's going to be this clash. And the Bible prophesies that this clash between these two powers, that a big part of that clash will take place in Africa. Mr. Flurry writes, are you willing to examine the prophecies of your Bible and put them to the test? Events are proving the Bible true right before our eyes, and it's more so than ever here at the start of 2018. Now, its scripture shows that Iran is going to benefit most from this spread of extremism. It is doing all it can to encourage the radicalization of Egypt and the spread into Libya. Scripture tells us that soon Ethiopia will also fall into that terrorist camp. Many of our readers have scoffed at that statement, but events in that country are already moving in that direction. And now we're seeing more uncertainty, more instability in Ethiopia. And as we said, Daniel 11 and verse 40 talks about that clash. In verse 43, it talks about ruling over the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at its steps. So here this is saying the king of the north, this German-led European power, conquers Egypt, Libya, and Ethiopia. Why does it take this three? Well, the implication is that they're allied with the king of the south. They're allied to Iran. And so when this king of the north conquers Iran, they take these three countries as well. So these other powers, they're going to be aligning with Iran and with their radical Islam. And so, like I said, we've been saying this for years, and now you have this think tank, and there are many others. I'm just building it around just this one 2018 forecast. They're saying, well, we've seen radical Islam rise in these unstable areas. Watch radical Islam in Africa in 2018. It's going to make real strides, and it's going to impact places like Ethiopia. And as it said there, that's going to create real headaches for Europe. There's going to be increasing pressure for Europe to get involved. They're going to have to work hard and fast on a solution. And now they're forecasting for this year that Europe won't be able to successfully confront that, and that may well be the case. But you're seeing this clash building between radical Islam in this area and Europe. Number 9 on their list, I will just skip over quickly. I won't play a clip for that, just to save time for some of the ones I want to talk about in a bit more detail. That one was titled Identity Politics in Southern Asia. So here they talk about how radical Islam is rising in Asia as well, and then how nationalism is rising too. Some of this, they point out, takes the form in kind of anti-Chinese rhetoric and feeling, but you're seeing a lot of assertive nationalism rising all across Asia. And in a lot of ways, this is really part of the same story we had on the cover of our recent Trumpet print edition about the rise of these strongmen, because they are nationalistic leaders in many cases, nationalistic strongmen. So you're seeing them spread across Asia. Really, as we talked about in that magazine, they're spreading across the whole world. But that was their number 9 point, identity politics in South Asia. Here is now risk number 8.
Risk number 8 is the United Kingdom. Part of it, of course, is Brexit, by far the most challenging international negotiation being underway anywhere in the world. And neither the United Kingdom or the Europeans are really in line in terms of what they want. That's only going to cause market uncertainty all year long.
The biggest issue is Northern Ireland. The UK is going to leave the EU. So there's got to be a border somewhere, north, south, or east, west. Any special deal on that border is going to set a precedent that Scotland, even London, the city of London, is going to want to follow. It doesn't work. Moreover, Theresa may not finish her term. The most benign scenario is that another Tory takes over, but that would upset Article 50. The least benign scenario is that there's a new election. Jeremy Corbyn wins.
And I got to tell you, if Corbyn actually becomes prime minister, that's probably worse for the United Kingdom than the Brexit negotiation.
That would probably be game over for the United Kingdom if Jeremy Corbyn became prime minister. But that's their forecast for the UK, for 2018. One of the big hotspots to watch is the UK and basically the decline of the UK. That was also, you heard, as well as Ian Bremner, the president, you also heard the chairman of the Eurogroup, Cliff Kupchan. He was on that clip as well. But in that report, they write, 2017 may not have been fun for the UK. 2018 will be worse. The country's troubles will come both from acrimonious Brexit negotiations and difficult domestic politics. And they write, the UK is in a tough position. Now, it's not like everything was wonderful and then Britain made a huge mistake in leaving the European Union. I mean, if you're a regular listener to this program, you've heard me complain enough about the EU to know I don't believe that. But at the same time, there are some risks, big risks associated with these negotiations. The EU could choose to be vindictive, to try and punish Britain for leaving the EU. And there are plenty of potential problems there. And at the same time, there are all these political problems. In their report, they basically gave Theresa May only a 55% chance of surviving the year in power. That's not very reassuring. If you say, well, it's 55% chance that you're still in, 45% chance that you've gone. You can almost toss a coin. So big potential for political uncertainties there. And as they heard, you could see the government topple. You could see Jeremy Corbyn come in, which would be an absolute disaster. So Britain there is facing more decline in 2017. Now, of course, the decline of Britain has been a major forecast of ours. At this point, it's probably one of the least controversial, and it's pretty obvious. Now, Britain has declined, and you can read much more about that in our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Again, another book, as with all of our books, we'd be more than happy to send to you for free, to ship to you anywhere in the world. And that really shows how Britain's rise and now Britain's fall were forecast in the Bible. And in fact, when Mr. Armstrong first drafted the material that made its way into that book, that was back in the 1930s, where the decline of Britain wasn't at all obvious. And he was saying, look, it's going to decline. Even then, one of the first editions of the book, I think, was in the 1940s. He was saying, again, it's going to decline. The situation's going to get worse. And we've seen so much of that happen. And we could see that accelerate dramatically in 2018. Well, let's listen now to the next point from the Eurasia Group.
Risk number six is erosion of institutions. People don't trust bureaucratic, technocratic governance. In the United States, the legitimacy of the media is significantly down. Nobody knows who's telling the truth. Fake news. Elections, legitimacy down. Europe and the United States, turnout down in both.
These institutions are becoming less legitimate, the societies are becoming more polarized, and in 2018, we're going to see that process pick up steam. It's going to make a difference in the ability of the United States, Pax Americana, to lead by example for the rest of the world.
I guess we did skip over clip number seven deliberately. That one was protectionism 2.0, which is kind of an interesting but a little more complicated point, so I figured for time we'd skip over that. We'll get into some of the same trends that they talked about on that risk of protectionism 2.0 a little later. But so then that's how we made our way to clip number six, the erosion of institutions. And so we see trust in American government falling dramatically, the country divided. And in the report, they write that the result of this is often instability, see Venezuela, or authoritarian rule, see Turkey. And they note that this is a worldwide phenomenon. They're right, we're seeing the broad erosion of political institutions across Eastern Europe, in Spain, Turkey, Brazil, South Africa, and other countries. The rise of populism across the developed world and increasingly in emerging markets, apparently that's hard to say, isn't yet having a dramatic impact on policymaking. Lastly, institutional erosion across many countries risks structural instability in the global system. Today's disgruntled middle classes in emerging markets would have a more direct route to power, as would the developed markets left behind from globalization. Absent solutions from global leaders, which aren't in the offering in the foreseeable future, traditional state-based international relations will become more and more unstable. Conflict will become more frequent, decision-making degraded, and internal chaos common. And this, in part, is exactly what we're talking about in that strongman trumpet edition. We're seeing division, yes, in the United States as there's more and more distrust in the government and half the population completely distrust the other half. But then this same trend in other countries is leading to the rise of strong leaders as democratic or liberal institutions, as the trust in those declines. And as we talked about in that trumpet, as we've talked about in quite a few shows on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show over the last month or so since that trumpet came out, this is based on Bible prophecy. The Bible describes many of these end-time leaders as being kings, not democratic leaders, but kings, people who rule with a certain amount of authoritarianism. So it forecasts the rise of these leaders. And if you're going to have kings, well, that implies that many of these democratic institutions or these other institutions of government are going to become weaker. And so that's exactly what we see across so much of the world. Now, if you have a divided America, these weakening institutions is what would have to happen. If you have a strong man leading Europe, these weakening liberal democratic institutions, again, is what you would expect to happen. So the Bible says, too, that this is making the world a more dangerous place because America is no longer keeping the peace. And you see the Eurasia Group talking about some of the same things. Well, listen, we'll move on now. We're down to risk number five.
Risk number five is U.S.-Iran relations. I think it's safe to say that neither the Americans nor the Iranians are happy with each other at this point, despite this nuclear deal. President Trump, to start with, is going to do everything possible to pick on Iran on the non-nuclear side. That means in terms of support for anti-U.S. and anti-U.S. ally proxies across the region, support for terrorism, as well as picking up economic sanctions, diplomatic efforts, and military efforts by the United States to check Iranian geopolitical power. It's been on the rise across the region.
Trump also, and it's very important to understand, he can get up morning and he can just end the deal any day. If this deal goes down, sanctions will get slapped back on and the Iranian nuclear program could very well start back up again. This time next year, we could well be talking about Israeli strikes on Iranian nuclear facilities. That's a bad movie and we've all seen it.
Now, I think this one they get a bit back to front, but I thought I'd include it because Iran is in the news a lot these days. And as they point out, Iran is really building its geopolitical power. But the U.S. isn't the one to worry about here. Iran has broken international agreement after international agreement. They're not going to just not go out of after a bomb unless the deal falls apart. You know, they're going to be going after a bomb. You look at their track record, you can be sure they're going to be working towards a nuclear bomb no matter what the case is. But maybe they'll just be more discreet about it if and while the nuclear deal remains in place. I need to stop my TV from turning off somehow. There we go. So Iran is going to be a major geopolitical risk in the year ahead. And we talked about this in prophecy already in that first item on the list when we talked about North Africa. But Iran is also very much in the news right now because of the protests. Now, we have a couple of articles on these on our website. But while we're talking about Iran, I thought I'd bring you one interesting or one good report I thought from it on these protests. This was from The Spectator making a great point. And they write, if there's one lesson the world should have learned from Iran's Green Revolution of 2009 and the so-called Arab Spring that follows, it is this, that the worst regimes stay, or that it is the worst regimes stay. Rulers who are only averagely appalling, Tunisia's Zine El Abidine, Ben Ali, Egypt's Hosni Mubarak, can be toppled by uprisings. Those who are willing to kill every one of their countrymen stay. So you only get rid of the leaders who aren't willing to kill masses and masses of people. The ones that are the ones that stick around. So they write, so it is that after almost 500,000 dead, we enter 2018 with Bashar al-Assad still president of Syria And with Iran's mullahs approaching the 40th anniversary of their seizure of power in 1979. Last week, this lesson got a chance to be learned again when the protests broke out on streets across Iran and the world wondered which date this might echo. A revolution finally to counter 1979 or just another replay of the brutally suppressed protests of 2009? He did talk about how these are a big deal, how the regime may well be worried because these protests, they're not just taking place in the cities, they're taking place all across the cities, the countryside. But he writes, yet anyone who expects these demonstrations to lead to swift change in the nature of the Iranian government remembers no history. Shortly after the latest protests began, the country's security forces, including the Ministry of Intelligence and Security, were seen photographing the events. In Iran, a regime camera is as deadly as a sniper's sights, only more delayed. As in 2009, the photographs will be used by the police to arrest demonstrators and also family members unconnected with the protests. These will be followed by the torture and rape of men and women in prison by the theocratic regime's frontmen. As after the Green Revolution, there will be in due course show trials, forced recantations and executions. This is how a police state with four decades of experience goes about its business. In 1979, the behavior of the Shah's dreaded Savak secret police was one of the spurs for the revolution. The Ayatollahs have superseded the Savaks, finally tuned their brutality and learned from their mistakes. And that, I think, is... Yeah, this is one of the big takeaways as you look at some of these predictions for the world in 2018. It's all of these dark, evil regimes that are flourishing. We'll read similar accounts of some things going on in China as we go through this. They're the ones that are doing really well and that are prospering in the absence of strong American leadership. Going back to this article, it's called, by the way, The Iran Rebellion the World Wants to Ignore, from The Spectator. But they write, anyone in doubt about the capacity of the supreme leader to hang on to power need only watch the footage of crowds in the city of Rasht advancing down the street in one of the first nights of protest. You can see the exact moment when the regime's revolutionary guards start attacking the protesters. The crowd that is marching one way down the street suddenly finds an organized army running towards them. These are trained killers being unleashed on angry but peaceful civilians. 600 people have already been arrested and dozens already killed. The civilians don't stand a chance. And that's sadly the way that it is and the way that it's going to be with Iran. Mr. Joel Hilliker, Trump, covered this yesterday in a blog piece called Listen to the Voices of Protests Within Iran. And he talks about, you know, you can see this from the news. You can see this just by understanding the character of the Iranian regime. But Bible prophecy also tells us that these protests are not going to succeed. He writes, since the early 1990s, our editor-in-chief has been watching for Iran to fulfill the biblically prophesied role of King of the South. Daniel 11 reveals that it has a pushy, provocative foreign policy and leads an alliance of Middle Eastern nations. Ever since the Islamic Revolution in 1979, this has described Iran's behavior perfectly. Mr. Flowery's decades-old prophecy-based forecast of Tehran's dangerous religious zealotry, terrorist activities, spreading regional dominance, takeover of Iraq, pursuit of nuclear arms, and determination to punish America, eliminate Israel, and seize Jerusalem have all been vindicated by subsequent events. You can be sure, he writes, that whatever happens with these protests, they will not knock Iran off this course. The voices of these anguished Iranian masses are worth listening to while you can. They probably won't be making headlines for much longer. But they aren't going away. They'll just fade into the dull chorus of mankind that languishes under wicked rulership. So that, sadly, is the state of Iran in 2018. It's going to continue and going to continue to be a destabilizing force. We'll take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll keep counting down to the number one geopolitical risk in 2018, according to this Eurasia Group consultancy firm.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical. But world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Our fourth risk is Mexico. NAFTA. The negotiation could fall apart. Might not work. Trump could initiate withdrawal, and that would stop negotiations, at least temporarily, creating tremendous uncertainty over billions of dollars of trade, and especially hurting the Mexican economy, which is very dependent on its trade with the United States.
And you really don't want all that happening in an election year. It's going to politicize, create a great sense of anti-Americanism, and the person who's most likely to play it well, that's López Obrador. In charge of his Morena party, he and what will certainly be a much more anti-U.S. cabinet will create massive uncertainty for the economic environment of America's southern neighbor.
So massive uncertainty in Mexico, and increasingly anti-American Mexico. Now, ignoring some of the politics there, it does seem certain that Mexico is going to become more anti-American over the year and could well have this radically anti-American government. There was one writer a while ago who basically described this other guy, I'm not going to try and pronounce his name because I'll thoroughly butcher it, as kind of like a Mexican Hugo Chavez. It could be right there on America's border, going around just like Hugo Chavez did, making these alliances with all these other powers that are hostile to the United States. And this is really important. Dominance of the Caribbean basin is absolutely integral to America's safety, to its ability to project power. I mean, if a rival power can establish a significant presence in the Caribbean, it can threaten just about all of the heart of America. It's key to America's trade. The majority of all U.S. waterborne foreign trade travels to or from U.S. ports on the Gulf of Mexico. So the majority of America's trade goes through the Gulf of Mexico right there. And you've got, you know, obviously Mexico is just even right there on the border. And so America ought to be really concerned when there are more and more foreign powers moving in to the Caribbean, moving into South and moving into South America itself, moving in with the opportunity to move into Mexico. And this isn't just Donald Trump's fault, certainly not at all. A lot of this began under the former president, Barack Obama. He practically invited them in when he declared that the Monroe Doctrine was over. This idea that America was going to keep foreign powers away from the American mainland, Secretary of State John Kerry, he announced the era of the Monroe Doctrine is over. I think Mr. Obama made similar comments saying it's finished. It's, you know, we're not bothered about foreign powers moving into America's backyard anymore. So you've had, since then, more and more powers moving in. You've had a string of left-wing and radical left governments fall, and then they've been replaced with governments more open to world trade. And then with Donald Trump upending South America's trade, threatening NAFTA, pulling the plug on the Pacific trade deal, rightly or wrongly, there were definitely some big downsides with that deal. But the fact remains, by pulling the plug on it, a lot of those powers that were going to make trade deals with the US are looking more towards Europe and more towards China. So you're seeing Europe and China move into Mexico. You're seeing Mexico becoming increasingly unstable. Stephen Kinzer, he was the one that likened this other guy to Hugo Chavez. And he writes, this could bring the United States something it has never had before, an unfriendly country on our border. I think never is probably a bit of an exaggeration, but at least never in recent times. And it wouldn't even take a new president for Mexico for them to start making these strong relationships with foreign powers. They're alarmed by this talk of tariffs, so they're reaching out more and more to Europe and to Mexico and to China. Europe went through a whole host of trade deals with Mexico just over the last year, or rounds of trade negotiations to come up with a comprehensive trade deal. They're closer than ever to a major, major trade deal with just about all of Latin America. So you're seeing these key powers moving away from the United States, In some cases, destabilizing, and then also drawing closer to Europe and to China, bringing these foreign powers right into America's backyard. And that is a major geopolitical risk. And again, it's one that we've been warning about for years. The May 1962 plain truth that says the United States is going to be left out in the cold as two gigantic trade blocs, Europe and Latin America, begin mesh together and begin calling the shots in world commerce. And the Bible talks about a global trading relationship that these are going to be included in. We might talk about that as we go down the list. So Mexico, Latin America, destabilizing, becoming anti-American. That's a major growing risk for America in the year ahead. Now let's look at the number three risk.
What we have is the most important global sector being an object of great contention between the world's two most important economies, the U.S. and China. It's a fight over big data. It's a fight over information, and it's a fight increasingly over the attempt to dominate artificial intelligence. In China, it's the government pouring cash in with companies aligned and patriotic. In the case of the United States, more advanced.
Well, I guess we chopped the beginning and the end off that clip, unfortunately, but that was the tech Cold War that was their number three point. And as he went on to point out in that clip, American powers are, the Chinese government is behind and orchestrating these powers, while American companies are not patriotic, he said. That's almost an exact quote. And they're competing against each other. They're certainly not coordinated. So you've got these other countries coordinating assaults on the United States in this tech Cold War, while American companies are not fighting back. And we've pointed to the dangers from this tech sector as well for years. Here's an article from 1995 from Mr. Gerald Flurry. He begins this article, "Most of us have heard the story of Achilles, the warrior who was only vulnerable in his heel. America is the greatest superpower this world has ever known. But we have a very vulnerable point in our military, our own Achilles heel. It is so dangerous that I am amazed it hasn't received more publicity. There is a Bible prophecy which gives a blood-curdling alarm to America's Achilles heel. Exploiting this vulnerable point may trigger the greatest shock in the history of warfare." And then he goes on to quote from an intelligence report that just talks about how dangerous computers are and how vulnerable so many systems are to computers, which in the early 1990s, that wasn't something that was on many people's radars. And this quote that Mr. Flurry was reading from, it writes, "Computer dependence is the Western world's Achilles heel. Within a few years, this weakness could be tested to the full." And now we see a tech Cold War, as it talks about, where nations are competing to develop more and more advanced tech weapons, things like artificial intelligence. But as he points out, in some countries you have institutions backed, closely aligned with the government, and in the US you do not. And this is causing a vulnerability for the United States. And in that article, Mr. Flurry drew attention to a prophecy in Ezekiel 7 and verse 14, which says, "They've blown the trumpet even to make ready, but none goes to the battle, for my wrath is upon the multitude thereof." And Mr. Flurry writes, "The trumpet of war was blown in Israel, mainly America and Britain, but it seems everybody was expecting our people to go to battle. But the greatest tragedy imaginable occurred. Nobody went to battle, even though the trumpet was blown. Will it be because of a computer terrorist?" He writes, he goes on to say, "The overall reason this curse has occurred is because God's wrath is upon the multitude thereof. Will one of God's curses come upon us in the form of computer terrorism? We're not receiving God's blessing. We're certainly seeing more and more computer terrorism, even from Russia and China, attacks on the U.S. government itself. We saw quite a lot of that in the last years of Mr. Obama's administration, where they're stealing massive, massive amounts of data. So you're seeing this rise here, and they're saying, well, watch for this tech Cold War to accelerate in 2018. Just this year, in 2017, Germany started a major cyber hub, just this huge organization for cyber defense and offense. So you can definitely see a lot more of this coming in the year ahead, just as we've been predicted. Now, number two is another point where I think they make some interesting points, though perhaps I don't fully agree. But we'll play number two now, and then we can talk about it when it's done.
"But also much less aligned, and these companies are not patriotic. They're increasingly fighting against each other, and they're certainly not playing nice with Washington.
Our number two risk is accidents. There's no global policeman, and the wood is dry in a lot of arenas around the world. Take cyber. Lots of state and non-state actors have tremendous cyber capability. We could be facing a year when there's a cyber takedown of a large part of a major economy. Second, Syria. It's a country where countries that don't like each other have a lot of hardware in close proximity. The United States and Russia, the United States and Iran. Something could well go wrong.
North Korea. Not that we're expecting a war, but it's certainly more likely than it has been. The idea that the Americans are telling the North Koreans, fire and fury, you guys can't develop an ICBM, and they're saying, oh yeah, watch us. Certainly greater danger around that. Terrorism. Hitting Americans outside the United States or even back at home, the overreaction from the Trump administration would be extravagant. We haven't had a major geopolitical accident since the Cuban Missile Crisis decades ago. 2018 feels like a time when our luck may be running out.
No, it's a good point. I think it's just maybe accident isn't really the best word for what they're talking about. I mean, the Cuban Missile Crisis, it would be hard to describe that as a geopolitical accident. I think what they're really saying is, you know, there's a big possibility for just something big that is unexpected, kind of like 9/11 or, you know, this kind of event that nobody's predicting right now specifically, but you can kind of forecast in general that there could be one of these big events. Some use the term black swan, meaning as a term that's used for these things that kind of are a risk that's unanticipated, that comes out of the blue, at least in the specifics. They're saying that basically with the world just so dangerous, with so many different dangerous areas, so many different dangerous hotspots, the chances of something unanticipated is very high. And I think they're absolutely right on that. Now we'll hear their final point, their number one geopolitical risk for 2018.
And our number one risk for 2018 is China loves a vacuum. For decades now, it's the Americans that have told other countries in the world how to reform. The Russians after Soviet collapse, the East Europeans, emerging markets, yes, even the Chinese. But today, in 2018, you could argue that the American political system is in greater need of structural reform than that of Xi Jinping's China. She's the strongest leader that China's had since Mao Zedong. He has consolidated power domestically, and he's prepared to play an increasingly global leadership role at a time when the Americans will not and cannot lead by example. The geopolitical vacuum doesn't get filled, but it becomes much more antagonistic and confrontational because of the rise of China.
Especially in US-China. China's not going to play on North Korea. Trade tensions are going to break out. So the US-China relationship is going to be very tricky. There is, for the very first time, an alternative to the Western model of liberal democracy. It's Xi Jinping, it's China. And that's our top risk for 2018.
So China is going to threaten U.S. interests, and then you've got this rival model. No longer is democracy the end of history or the only way forward, but you've got this alternative model from China. And of course, well, as of everything, the Eurogroup isn't the only one talking about this. And I just thought I'd bring you another really good article on this subject. This was from Ramon Marx, called Coming to Grips with a Rising China, from Real Clear World, or Real Clear Defense, I think it was. And it makes some great points. Writes, the strategic implications of China's rising power have prompted ambivalent reactions in the US and Western media. It talks about how nobody's really sure what America should do about a rising China. All right, since the end of World War II, and particularly since the collapse of the Soviet Union, it has been an article of faith that the United States is the world's preeminent power in every domain, including economic, political, and military. With China's talented population four times larger than the US, its vast natural resources strategically positioned in Eurasia, and its unique adaptation of market economics, it has significant potential to shatter those long-held assumptions of US national security strategy. Shatter those assumptions that America is preeminent in all of these areas. He writes, the United States will only be able to do so much to punch above its weight in any long-term economic competition with China. Size matters. A market economy of 1.4 billion educated people controlled by authoritarian values will have inevitable advantages over the United States, with a population one quarter of the size, no matter how talented and dynamic. Instead of accepting these emerging realities, however, the reaction by many in the United States has been denial. So China's this rising power, that he basically draws the conclusion in this article that it's inevitable that China is going to take over from the United States and as the world's most powerful nation, and that the United States just has their head in the sand about it. All right, the very psychology of US attitudes about China must change. The core assumption that the United States has and will always have the upper hand, based ultimately on its economic power, has to give way to a new reality. Political, diplomatic, and military power inevitably flows to a country that manages to double the size of its economy at least every decade, if not at its most recent pace of every 5 years. The United States became the world's largest economy, surpassing Great Britain in 1822. Over 100 years later, it is likely China's turn to take over as number one. That was copied and pasted directly from their website, but the maths there obviously doesn't add up. Maybe it's meant to be 1922. Anyway, it says, ironically, China's form of totalitarian more closely follows the old fascist model of Germany, Japan, and Italy than it does Soviet communism. So that's what this rising power, that is an alternative to the United States now, that other countries are looking to. They closely follow the old fascist model of Germany. I write, its advanced facial and voice recognition systems have been used to create the world's largest domestic surveillance network and were used recently to locate and apprehend a BBC reporter in just 7 minutes. He goes on to talk about how China so far has avoided military confrontation with the US, how it mines the open market and global system just to try and do everything it can to get its hands on Western technology. How the J-20 stealth fighter bears a, quote, astonishing resemblance to America's F-22 Raptor. The FC-31 Grifalcon that China's developing, he writes that it is a knockoff of the US F-35 fighter. And then it talks about just how much China is benefiting from open scientific just cooperation with the United States. 300,000 Chinese students enrolled in American universities, many concentrating in scientific and engineering fields, gaining access to top American know-how, he writes. To allow such a number of Russian students a similar privilege during the Cold War would have been unthinkable. And he talks about how many of just these senior Chinese scientists now, who are right now running top, say, Chinese military development projects, worked in the United States for several years. Went over to work in the US, and then they come back to China to work on Chinese defense projects. And they said they even worked in advanced military projects in the Department of Energy's National Laboratories in the US. So they work in advanced military projects in the US, and then they go back to China. So they talked to me of one example, Professor Chen Qihi, who was deputy director of the Los Alamos Center for Nonlinear Studies. And then he moved back to China, where he's believed to be helping develop a hypersonic glide vehicle, which is just a game-changing type of missile. He then talks about, you've got China's presence in the South China Sea and how this has had a major impact on the U.S. He also writes, less attention has been paid to the looming strategic threat posed by China's surge of foreign economic development programs, including the colossal One Belt, One Road project. It goes on to talk about that and all of China's efforts there. So some sobering words there, and sobering words from the Eurogroup. The Eurogroup writes that the 19th Party Congress, going back to this think tank organization, marked a turning point in China's contemporary history. The speech President Xi Jinping gave there may be eventually recognized as the most geopolitically noteworthy event since Mikhail Gorbachev formally dissolved the Soviet Union. And it talked about how China is now openly making a bid for global leadership. So big upheaval there in China in terms of China challenging the United States. And this is something we've talked about again for years. Mr. Gerald Flowery had an article in the 2016 Trumpet magazine, that talked about how China is steering the world towards war. That was the title. He talked about how much trade passes through the South China Sea, roughly one third of the world's maritime commerce. He writes, now the American military is retreating and other powers are coming to fill the vacuum. This is going to dramatically affect trade around the world, and the U.S. especially. So China is really building these trade connections. Mr. Flurry goes on to talk about how in Deuteronomy 28, God promised that he would give America control over the strategic sea gates of the world. And if they disobeyed, well, that control would be given to America's enemies. And that's what you're seeing in the rise of China. There's another prophecy in Isaiah 23 that I don't have time to get into that talks about an alliance, a trade alliance specifically, between Europe and China. And now we're seeing China emerging, trying to be the leader of the free world. You see them building this new Silk Roads, this roads to Europe, this major trade relationship with Europe. You see both of them making inroads into Latin America, taking over sea gates, all primed to seize world trade away from the United States. Getting ready to take the United States down. This is what you see in a forecast of the world in 2018. Now, this report from the Eurasia Group, it's not necessarily the perfect overview of 2018 according to Bible prophecy. There are huge parts of Bible prophecy they don't appreciate. As I mentioned just briefly, the Europeans are also a threat to the US world order. And America doesn't even question the loyalty of Europe or that they could ever become adversaries. But that too is prophesied in the Bible. The Bible calls this European powers America's lovers. And that's exactly it. America believes they're so close friends that there's no danger at all. But the point is that world news is looking more and more like Bible prophecy. We're at a time where risk organizations look at the news and they say, you know, we're in unprecedentedly dangerous times. And then when they sit down and they highlight the risks, well, they're the same risks that you see in your Bible. And that's the message we have to get out. Because if you just see the Eurogroup's report, it's a pretty bleak picture. You heard some people say things along those lines. A dangerous year, more conflict in a world full of nuclear weapons. But add Bible prophecy and the picture changes entirely. Each piece of bad news is confirmation of the Bible's accuracy, that there is a great creator working out a plan, allowing these things to happen for a loving purpose. And these same prophecies tell us where they're leading. They're leading to Jesus Christ's return and this whole world coming to know God. So we have to get this hope out now, before these even darker times come, when it's harder to get this message out, so people can understand the hope behind these news events. So thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the program. We really appreciate all of that. Mr. Stephen Flurry will be back on Monday. If you want more world news, we'll be recording Trumpet Hour in just a few minutes. You can stick around to listen to that this afternoon or this evening. So thanks for listening and stay tuned to kpcg.fm.